Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference are four of America's top reporters to talk with Dr. Teresa Casuso, a close friend of Cuban Premier Fidel Castro, an alternate Cuban delegate to the UN before her recent resignation. He is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks. Our guest today is Dr. Teresa Casuso, the high-ranking Cuban diplomat who recently broke with Fidel Castro and ignored orders to return to Havana. Her assignment to the United Nations was in recognition of her long devotion to Castro's revolutionary movement. She joined the Castro forces in 1956 while she was living in Mexico. Her home in Mexico became a center for Castro revolutionaries, and she was once arrested by the Mexican government for storing arms for Castro. When Castro came into power, Dr. Casuso became his press attaché, and she became one of his closest advisors. She arranged his visit to the United States. Last year, she was made a delegate to the UN with the rank of ambassador. She has been a novelist and a playwright, and she holds two doctor's degrees. We'll start the questions today with Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Casuso, as you know, an increasing number of people in this country believe that Dr. Castro is a communist. Do you, of your own knowledge, know whether he is a communist or is not a communist?
Before I answer your question, Mr. Spivak, I would like to ask the audience to excuse my English. I hope everybody realizes what a tremendous handicap is to answer delicate questions in a foreign language. So please excuse all the faults I am going to have in this program. Concerning your question, Mr. Spivak, it's very difficult to classify Dr. Castro because he is not a communist in the way that he's not a member of any party. He doesn't follow any lines told him to follow. He's just spontaneously doing things in a communist pattern, but not because he is personally, he doesn't have any discipline, any political theory. He's just a Fidelist, not communist.
Well, is there any question in your mind, though, but that he is making a communist satellite out of Cuba?
Well, his facts show that more than any words we could say. But I think this is just a consequence of his own personal anarchy, that he went to that as he could have go to another thing, just to go to the most extremist things, because he wants to be a record man in every way and go further than anybody. He thinks this is the best thing to show perhaps the United States how much he goes far from them to the other extreme.
Dr. Castro, you were at the United Nations when Dr. Casuso, when Dr. Castro was here. And I believe you must have some knowledge of his meetings with Khrushchev and with Gomulka. Do you know what transpired between them? Were they just conversations or were there some agreements between them?
Well, I wasn't present at any of those meetings except in the moment I enter in the delegates' lounge south, and he was talking with Mr. Gomulka. I could comment this because I didn't assist there as a confidential witness. I just entered, and the guards took me out a few minutes later, so I can say what I heard. Mr. Gomulka was trying to convince him to make elections in Cuba and to keep legislative forms. And Dr. Castro was stubbornly denying it and saying, no, no, the Cuban people do not want that. You are wrong about us. And he did not accept any suggestion Mr. Gomulka was making him.
How would you now describe the relationship between Dr. Castro and the Soviet Union?
Well, I think it's a very delicate situation. I think the Soviet Union has found out that it's terrible to deal with Dr. Castro because he's unpredictable. And I think they are as much a headache as even the United States government has found the same. He's uncontrollable, you see. He follows his own ideas in the spur of the moment, and that's not the behavior of a communist, and it's nothing that they can handle. It's a very difficult person to handle and to do what he's told to do.
Now, Dr. Casuso, you've known him well for a number of years. Do you think the man is mentally and physically sick?
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid he is very sick.
Is this something recent, or is it something that you've seen in him over the years?
Well, it has been developing more and more, and recently I saw him briefly here, but I know that he is very sick, and his mind has been going more and more disturbed in a very dramatic way. It's very unpleasant to me to talk about that, because personally I am very fond of him, of his, and I see this process. I saw it, how it started after he came from the mountains, and it has been getting worse and worse.
Mr. Conniff.
Dr. Casuso, just to continue that for a moment, does this mental sickness that you are now aware of, does that have any physical basis? There have been reports in this country that he is suffering from some malignant disease, and that is the cause of some of his feverish outbursts.
I couldn't tell you. He was all the time in the hotel in bed when he was in the Teresa. I heard he was resting all the time. And there have been reports, of course, comments that he was poisoned in Havana some time ago. The only thing I can tell you is everything he ate was very carefully inspected, but that's a protection that is natural, no? I don't know what he had, but I know I can tell you that he is not the same boy I met in Mexico in 1956.
Well, that leads to my next question. In your letter of resignation, you accused him of some pretty terrible things, that he had enslaved the Cuban people and condoned murder and even executions and deprived the Cuban people of their liberties. And yet, in conclusion, you expressed your own personal admiration and esteem for him. Now, how would you reconcile this apparent contradiction?
Well, I tell him, I assure him, my only private personal affection, because he's like a member of my family. It's like to have a brother that is ill and he's doing evil, but he is my brother. I feel pity for him because it's a very dramatic case. He had everything in the hand to be very successful and make Cuba happy. And he lost the opportunity, and I know it's because his mind cannot be controlled by himself. He's living that tragedy. So he's a very dramatic case, and as a citizen, I cannot forgive him that. I cannot accept it. But as a private person, I feel this pity and affection for him more. He deserves it more now.
Excuse me, Dr. Casuso, but in your letter, you did mention about something about forgiveness. And I was thinking, in view of the terrible allegations you have made against him, don't you think that he should be punished in some form?
I didn't say forgiveness. I said, if someday you feel sick and defeated and you come to my door again as you did in Mexico, I'll open my door to you and give you refuge as you give it to a wounded animal that could be a looking for refuge. That's the way I said it. I didn't say forgiveness.
I see, but...
Because I am not entitled to forgive what he did to my country. That's not a personal thing.
I see. You did classify yourself as now in the opposition. What form is that opposition taking, may I ask?
Well, it hasn't taken yet any form. I'm just writing some articles. I'm going to write a book on Dr. Castro and this, what happened in Cuba. But as a militant, I haven't taken any position.
I see.
Mrs. Craig.
Well, Dr. Casuso, in the letter you say you love him so dearly that you cannot join either side, you cannot take sides. How can you do that? Do you love him more than you love your own country?
I didn't say that in my letter, Mrs. Craig. I'm afraid you don't have my letter.
Yes, sir, I have it.
I didn't say I cannot take either side. What I tell him is, because I know how they comment when you detach from them, that I am not in the communist side or in the imperialist side. That's what I said in my letter. And I explain him, because I know he's going to say that I will sold myself to imperialism, which is the usual cliche. That's what I say in my letter about sides.
I, who love you so dearly, cannot join one side or the other. Did you mean you could not join the Cubans who are now seeking to displace him?
My letter, Mrs. Craig, doesn't say that in any part. At the end, I say in Spanish, te quiere y te querrá siempre esta amiga. This verb in English don't have other meaning but love, but in Spanish there is a difference. Te quiere is not love in the sense of man, a woman to a man. It's I feel kindness, I feel fondness for you. We have another verb for love in English, is amor. I don't say amor in my letter. I say te quiere, not te ama.
It's a
difference. I'm sorry. It's a problem of languages.
Do you now regard him as unfit to have the government of Cuba?
Of course, he's completely unfitted for that.
Then why do you not join those groups of Cubans in this country who are seeking to displace him?
I am seeking that, but to the moment, I don't think I should jump just to one group. There are 5 or 7 groups. I am trying to tell first the Fidelists, which are honest, and they believe in the outside of Cuba that Fidel is right. I'm trying to make them realize that it is not true, that he's making mistakes, that he is no good for Cuba. That is my mission as a writer, as a person that was near him. It's not a matter of getting into one group, which there, I tell you, there are 4 or 5 that they have not a definite constitution yet. It's not a united opposition.
They
but
have
I'm doing
all,
my best.
They have all joined but one, I understand, under Mr. Miro in Florida, in Miami.
Oh, no, no. There are 4 or 5 groups, different groups.
But they
the
have
States.
All joined but one. I was
no, that's the idea. And
story,
in the
yes.
future, I had a meeting with some of these people, and in the future, the idea is to unite them, all the groups in one. But for the time being, as present, it's just different groups, and nobody controls the whole thing. We have to coordinate that. Something I intend to help in doing that.
Will you join a movement to displace him?
Of course I have to. I'm forced to that. I'm a citizen that has to do something.
Mr. McKee, Dr. Casuso, as a Cuban, you would certainly, I think, have some feeling on the question that I'm about to ask you, and I'd like to follow it up with another question. What do you, as a Cuban, think of Senator Kennedy's proposal that this country give support to groups of Cubans that are seeking to overthrow the Castro government? What do you think of that idea?
Mr. McKee, when you visit a house and you have hospitality, you should not make comments on what happened within the family. I know it affects my country, but I prefer not to talk about these problems that have to do in this moment with the politics in the within the United States.
Then by the same token, I presume you would not want to say anything about the proposals that Vice President Nixon has put forward for dealing with Cuba.
I think this is a matter of even good manners that I shouldn't comment these interior problems of the United States and candidates in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you say that the opposition to Castro has not yet been organized to the point to where you feel like it can really be regarded too seriously. Let me ask you this. Are there any remaining members of the revolution, leaders of the revolution in Cuba, that you think might be able to get the army behind them in Cuba and overthrow Castro?
There is one person.
Who is he?
Hubert Matos. Which
he's in jail, is he not?
He's in prison.
Mm-hmm.
He could do something, but the army in Cuba is not an important thing now. Fidel is arming the militias. He doesn't trust much the rebel army. And his strength now, his military force, is the militia, which is something rather fascist, more
than
communist.
You say he no longer trusts the rebel army?
Well, he uses, for instance, for the execution, he uses the militia men, not the rebel army.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that they wouldn't like or they wouldn't do that.
Well, then, if the rebel army has turned against him, what chance is there that the militia might turn against him in the future? What do you think?
I think if the rebel army does something, the militias won't do much. They are just civilians getting some military training, and they are not very effective, I guess.
Mr. Spivak.
Doctor, there's been a good deal of controversy over how many people Castro executed officially. I think the official figures were somewhere around 700. Do you have any idea how many people were killed when Castro came to power?
Well, there are two different epochs or times. You are regarding to all the executed in Cuba since the 1st of January, last January?
Yes, 59.
Because I was talking about the last ones, which are our own people. This is what to us count, because the people that were executed during the Operation Truth were the most bloody murderers of the Batista regime that were executed to avoid the people to go and make by their own hands, take these people that have killed and tortured their families. And we never regard that as executions. I mean, we never count on that. I was talking about this, our own people that have been executed these recent days.
Well, how many people would you say have been executed since he became sick? I mean, of your own people.
Well, recently, what I have read in the newspaper about 15 or something like that, no? Or
15, you say? Oh,
yes,
but nothing.
Many of them were fighting with him in the Sierra Maestra. They were our own companions. There's no murderers or anything like that.
Are there any circumstances under which you think it would be possible for the United States to make an accommodation with Dr. Castro, to come to any agreement which might work something out favorably for them, him, and for us?
Well, I'm afraid there was a time when that could have been done, and no move was done toward that, but I'm afraid now it's too late. I don't know. Fidel Castro is so unpredictable that I think he is beyond any possibility of making him go to any straight line. That's why I had to leave him, because I didn't have hope that he could amend his behavior.
When did you first notice changes in him? When did you first notice?
Well, when I go to Cuba last year in January, I noticed that he had changed. He had been 2 years fighting in La Sierra, and he was fighting alone, and he suffered a lot, and he was very nervous, very unsteady, and obsessed by the idea of destruction and ruining. He wanted to ruin the merchants. He wanted to ruin the business. He wanted to destroy. It was an obsession.
Mr. Conniff,
you might want to clarify something here, Dr. Casuso. When in your letter you refer to the imperialists, do you consider the United States of America an imperialist power?
Well, there is an American imperialism that exercises its power all over the underdeveloped countries in the world. That's a historical, economical fact.
Well, do you think it's now being used, however, in the Marxist sense? and it, with all the connotations that that holds in Marxist theory. And that's the way Dr. Castro has been using it. Do you think we have been, excuse me, the bloody imperialists and the sort of imperialism that Dr. Castro means?
Well, Dr. Castro likes to make things very exaggerated because he needs to raise the people's feelings. One thing is an economical problem which has many political implications, and we have suffered, and we still suffer that in Latin America and in many other countries. And another thing is to make it like a bloody monster. It's a matter of talking, discussion, and asking our own rights, but I don't think we have to be full of hatred and to inflict and inject in the people hatred as he's
doing. Well, may I infer from your answers then that you do consider the United States has been imperialistic towards Cuba?
Well, there have been some protection of the American government to these imperialistic companies that have done many oppressive things in America, in Latin America.
Have the companies done anything good that has been helpful to the economy of Cuba?
Probably they have done some good, but it's, the evil has been more than the good.
I detect a note of doubt in here.
Mrs. Craig.
Dr. Casuso, I believe you have said that you could not accept communism because it denies human liberty. Do you approve of the kind of collective state that is now being installed in Cuba?
No, I don't approve that, but I don't approve it not because it cares to give the people help economically, in collective or in the way they want. It is because that is done at the price of men's freedom. It's a police state. They prosecute everybody. Nobody can think. Nobody can live. They are terrified. If that is the price that everybody eats, there must be some other way to find to make the people, to give food to the people, not at such a high price.
Do you believe, do you approve of the seizure of foreign properties without compensation?
Nobody could, being in its senses, approve that. I always were for that, for the compensations. I asked a person of the government months ago in the United Nations, please, do something about this. Establish some standard for the compensation. He told me that the American government didn't want to talk about that, accepting the basis of what the companies declared their wealth was there, because it was declaring much less than it was to pay less taxes. And the conversations couldn't go on. That's what the foreign minister of Cuba told me about 3 months ago when I asked him, please pay this compensation or start talking about that.
Dr. Casuso, you mentioned a moment ago about the retribution which has taken place against some of the people who were your former friends. Do you feel that you yourself are in any personal danger in New York, in the United States?
No, I don't think so. Here are many Fidelists. But they are Fidelists in good faith. You see, this has been a very confusing thing, because many people honestly believe that Fidel is the man that can save Cuba, and it's very hard to realize that the dissolution, that this leader failed, and everything has been done on the contrary of what was the purpose of it. And so these people cannot harm me, because they know I honestly am trying to tell them the truth, and they cannot trace me in my past, in my life, anything as to have been sold to anything or be lying to my people. That's why I'm not afraid. Of course, my family is in Cuba, and that's another thing.
Do you,
Mr. McGee? Dr. Casuso, as a member of Cuba's United Nations delegation, you were in a position to have certain information. I wonder if you know of anything that Castro may be planning against the United States naval base at Guantanamo Bay.
I don't know anything about that, because nobody knows what Fidel is planning, sometimes not even Fidel himself. Mm-hmm. It comes just in a moment.
All right.
But you can expect from him anything as long as he has no self-control. That is the problem with him. And in a moment, he can do something crazy, and nobody can tell what is going to happen.
Well, you've been deeply involved in these revolutionary movements, and one of the prime concerns in the Western Hemisphere is that Castro will try to spearhead revolutions in other Latin American countries. You are again associating yourself with a revolutionary movement. Is there any danger that Castro will create upheavals in other Latin American countries? Is he trying to do this?
I don't think so, because one of the most outstanding and strange things he has done recently is to catch the revolutionary people that were trying to leave in an expedition from Cuba to Nicaragua to fight the dictatorship there. And he caught them, and he didn't let them go, and he accused them that they are serving the United States interest to go to fight this dictatorship, what he did in Mexico when he went to fight in Cuba. So now he doesn't like the other people to make revolutions in Latin America, as I see.
We have less than 2 minutes, Mrs. Craig.
Do you believe that those around Castro, including his brother and Guevara, are using him to completely communize Cuba?
Yes, in a very clever way. They have, you said the right word, they have used him, but they cannot tell him what to do. It has been something pinching him around, pushing him in a very intelligent way, but he will not accept to be told what to do. He will keep being anarchic and erratic as he is.
Mr. Spivak.
Doctor, you said in your letter to Dr. Castro that you knew him probably better than anybody else did. Why did it take you 2 years, or almost 2 years, to learn that he was going to ruin Cuba?
It's not to learn that. I was hoping that he could recover and get into the better, more sane way, and I tried to help him in that. I asked him to remove me, to send me to the United Nations when my hopes came very, very weak, very small. But it's very hard to leave something when there is, he uses many truths. He uses them wrong, but it's very hard to make this step and break with all the past and the faith of other people that are backing him. There are many good people in Cuba, naive, innocent, humble people that are after Castro, and I couldn't just turn my back.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to interrupt. I see that our time is up. Monitors, thanks to Dr. Teresa Casuso and the members of the Meet the Press panel, Frank Conniff of Hearst Newspapers, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Frank McGee of NBC News, and Lawrence Spivak.